CBSI and the World, the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College. A Tale of Two Rivers. One river, extremely important to planet Earth, the Amazon. The other river, Coca River in Ecuador. I learned that, for example, the Brazilian state-run oil company Petrobras will appeal the decision from environmental regulator IBAMA, barring it from drilling an oil well near the Amazon River. This is recent reporting. The dispute marks an early test for President Lula da Silva, who has sought to balance environmental concerns against the need to promote economic development. Professor Lula da Silva, since his election last year, has done an excellent job of presenting himself as a peacemaker in Ukraine, as an environmentalist who will reverse or in some fashion reinvent policies that were said to be lax during the time of Mr. Bolsonaro's administration, and also a man who travels transnationally, a grandfatherly figure who has seen a lot of conflict and success in Brazil over these last decades. But we come now to the question of the Amazon River. Is it accurate to say that Petrobras does what the president wants it to do, or are these at odds despite the fact that the state owns Petrobras?
Well, John, Petrobras, like a number of different international but state-run oil companies, and ironically, many years ago, PDVSA in Venezuela used to follow along this model, although PDVSA is now, you know, thoroughly under state control. But Petrobras really has been an example of a quasi-independent, you know, relatively successful oil company. At least it's been held up that way for many years. But what your point also goes to is you know, two questions. One, the question of environmentalism, and to the question of the Amazon. And on the Amazon, I think it's important to point out that with all of the focus on the environment of the Amazon itself, the Amazon basin, which really goes to a, you know, series of surrounding mountains and highlands, I mean, the Andean Ridge. And so all of those countries on the west side of the of South America, their rivers, including, ironically, the Coca River that you mentioned, all flow into what ultimately becomes the Amazon River in the Amazon basin. But only 60% of that is actually in Brazil. Much of the Amazon and its wildlife and forest and other things also extends into places like Bolivia, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru. And so the importance for conserving it is not just on Brazil. It's on all places. The other issue that you mentioned with the Coca River is coming back to the question of green energy, and the fact that hydropower as well as wind and solar is a real resource coming out of the many different river estuaries in the region, and the question of having environmentally sensible and well-engineered projects to actually harness that, whether it's what happened with the Coca-Cola Sinclair Dam in Ecuador, contracted poorly to the Chinese, or what has happened, or the controversy over things like, for example, the Belo Monte dam and its environmental impact in Brazil. But the other piece in the case of Petrobras was the fact that under the previous administration, Petrobras was moving forward to developing this oil well basically near the mouth of the Amazon. The danger was the possibility that there could be an uncontained oil leak that could have disastrous environmental damages. But with the new politics of the Lula regime and its environmental advocacy in terms of the Amazon and other things, a relatively radical, strong-minded environmental minister, Maria Silva, and of course, the environmental regulatory organization, IBAMA, again, now under the hands of more left-oriented leadership, what you have then is this ruling by IBAMA saying, well, Petrobras, the quasi-independent oil organization, didn't have convincing enough environmental studies to say this was safe. They didn't have good enough vehicles for community consultation with indigenous groups who would be affected. So the fact that IBAMA basically shut down this very large, significant Petrobras oil operation. Petrobras is not at all happy about it. They're going to sue in the courts. It illustrates how they are, again, a technically competent organization, a quasi-independent organization. But Petrobras's agenda of getting more oil for Brazil, has come into conflict with the agenda of environmentalism, environmental protection, at least the new lens that the Lula-dominated new Obama now puts on that as part of their broader efforts to protect the Amazon.
Ecuador is especially engaging to me now, Professor, because you've guided me over these last weeks to identify President Lasso as one of the few remaining right-of-center presidents in all of the Americas. The pink tide is swept in the other direction, Lula da Silva and Mr. Petro of Colombia being examples. But I learn that President Lasso, who has now called a snap election to prevent being impeached and I guess removed from office by his own legislature, is now in contest with a previous president who has been convicted or at least accused of corruption and has been in Europe for many years. Correa is his name. But this is complicated by something I came across in these last hours, which is the Belt and Road Initiative. I learned from a banking think tank official that the Coca River has enjoyed a $2.7 billion Belt and Road Initiative loan from the People's Republic of China through one of their development banks to build a dam on the Coca River that is now regarded as completely unsafe and a failure. The concrete is collapsing, cracking and collapsing, and the walls of the reservoir are collapsing, so much so that it could put the whole dam at risk of failure. This is an example of the Belt and Road Initiative throughout the world, and especially in the continents of South America and Africa. But what I learn is that the Lasso question is not simple. We're looking at a country that is very fragile at the legislative level, at the energy level, and this loan with the People's Republic of China that doesn't leave you alone because you have a bad debt. What they do is they service the loan with another loan. So is Ecuador right now to be regarded as greatly at risk for a governmental collapse because of the debt that it owes China? And China does not walk away from its bad debts. We know this. They have agency, let's put it that way. And Mr. Lasso calling a snap election, and Korea, I picture him hovering around like a bird of prey. Is Ecuador now that fragile in your measure, Professor?
Well, certainly it is likely that the Correistas and the left could come back into power in Ecuador in the new election, which could occur as early as August 20th. And this is also strategically important for the United States because the center-right Lasso government in Ecuador is one of a very small handful, Ecuador, Uruguay, and Paraguay, of remaining governments in South America that may be seen as relatively friendly to or cooperative with U.S. initiatives. But a little bit of the history on this, of course. As you mentioned, Rafael Correa was one of the so-called pink tide leaders in Latin America in the early 2000s that came into power, reflecting frustrations across the region with corruption, poor performance, but basically hijacked democratic processes then to consolidate power. So that was Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. It was Evo Morales in Bolivia and Rafael Correa in Ecuador. And like those other leaders, Correa actually leveraged Ecuador's huge hydropower potential and others, like other leaders, got a lot of very significant loans from the Chinese, about $18 billion in the Ecuadorian case for a very small country, to build all these massive infrastructure projects, including six hydroelectric projects, all contracted out to the Chinese. And again, in these cases of Korea's populist government, a lack of transparency, there was major corruption. The projects were very badly done. So in the case of Coca-Cola Sinclair, the project was so badly done that it led to not only a poor construction, some 7,000 fissures and cracks. The dam itself may never actually be brought to full power, and the Ecuadorian government doesn't even want to take delivery on it from the Chinese now. In addition to that, it was so badly conceived that the hydraulic pressures led to the rapid erosion and the rerouting of the Coca River, as you alluded to, which actually led to a shift that almost ruptured a major oil export pipeline that went over the river. So it's just been a real mess. Now the U.S. Corps of Engineers and others are working with the Lasso government to try to undo some of the damages that this poorly conceived Chinese project set up. But part two of that, as you alluded to, is the fact that the leftists, the Coristas, have long had it out for, you know, those who have come back into power. First, Lenin Moreno, formerly Correa's vice president, who went in a different direction than Correa did. And now the center-right government of Guillermo Lasso, who from the very beginning has been under fire, very unpopular. And so we're in a situation with Ecuador right now where Lasso's government was accused of corruption. There were a series of votes against him. And in the wake of a pending what appeared to be an impeachment hearing that was going to go forward, he invoked a interesting clause in the Ecuadorian constitution called the double death or cruzado, muerte cruzado, which basically allows a president to say, I'm going to call for new elections that will dissolve the presidency. It will dissolve the National Assembly. So, but the bottom line of all this is that with that instability and the problems in Ecuador, you had a government that was supposed to stay in power until 2025 that is now going to have a snap election August 20th. And again, with the frustrations with Lasso, with the economic frustrations, it appears that the winners in this could be the Correa faction. In other words, that faction that brought the pink tide to Ecuador, that brought Chinese in, that brought those disasters to things like the Cocos and Sinclair, could retake power after August 20th, certainly in the national legislature. And so one of the last center-right governments in Latin America could be moving in a very worrisome direction. And I suspect we'll be talking a lot more about this as that snap election approaches and depending on who is the candidate and what happens after that.
Once upon a time, I was a literary person. You know this, Professor. And as you spoke of Ecuador and all of these competing factions, I thought to myself, what would Graham Greene make of this? He would choose to be a British hydrology engineer on loan to the U.S. in some fashion, sitting in Quito, imagining all these competing voices from China, from Belgium, I think that's where Korea is in sanctuary.
And yes, in exile right now.
Yes, of course. And of course, the U.S. would show up in its shiny new shoes saying that we have the answer. And at risk, of course, is the history of Ecuador and the collapse of a river. Wouldn't that be a juicy Graham Greene novel? Good heavens. And we'd have to bring the bishop in, of course. Professor Evan Ellis, writing novels for my imagination of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We're going to the Northern Triangle. You remember, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras were identified early on by the Biden administration as the source of the migration parades to the Mexican border. That is no longer the fact of the matter. The number one migrants on the border, we're told recently, is Venezuela. Number two is Colombia. However, once upon a time, Guatemala was seen as the anchor for U.S. policy such as it was. We're going there now because there's an election cycle underway and questions. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.